An alle Aufsichtspersonen. Verteilen Sie jetzt die Aufgabenbogen für den Prüfungsteil Hörverstehen. Die Prüfung beginnt in 2 Minuten. An die Kandidatinnen und Kandidaten. Beschriften Sie jetzt das Deckblatt des Aufgabenbogens Hörverstehen. Achtung! Lesen Sie die Aufgaben erst, wenn der englische Text beginnt. Kaufmännische Berufsmaturität 2010, Kanton Zürich, Englisch, Serie 1. Listening Comprehension. This part of the examination consists of 2 different listening comprehension tasks. There will be pauses before and after each task to give you time to read the questions and to check your answers. You will hear each task twice. Task 1. In the first part of the test, you're going to hear a radio program about globalization. As you listen, fill in the gaps 1 to 10 in the notes below. In some gaps, more than one word is necessary for a complete answer. You now have 90 seconds in which to look at task 1. Ready?
Globalization is a buzzword in our news bulletins, though according to some commentators, it's by no means a new phenomenon. Linda Gregory is the BBC World Service business correspondent. I've been speaking to her about globalization, and I asked her first for her definition of the term.
Well, globalization has become a kind of catch-all phrase that's used to describe the process of seemingly ever greater economic integration, a process in which economic events in one place pretty soon have huge implications almost everywhere else. So, there's a lot of different aspects to it. From the consumer's point of view, increasingly people think in terms of global brands. Nike sells its sneakers throughout the world, and Coca-Cola is bought in almost every country in the world. That's one aspect of it. Then, of course, there's the sort of... The economists are focused on things like the enormously increased volumes of international trade. And many commentators associate that with this nebulous process of globalization. And then, of course, there's the increasing pace of technological change. The fact that using modern communications via the internet, you have instant communication everywhere. And of course, using jet travel, you can travel rapidly from one place to another all over the world. So, increasingly, what happens in one place seems to affect almost everywhere else. And that's what's clubbed together as globalization.
Technological developments have made communication and travel much easier, so that the world seems to be a smaller place. This has resulted, for example, in greater international trade and foreign investment, both of which are signs or manifestations of what the experts call globalization. There are also cultural aspects of the globalization process, such as the increasing use of English and the appearance of similar, often American, products in different parts of the world. Here's Linda again.
The manifestations include global companies, the names that everybody's heard of, Sony, Microsoft, IBM, and also the fact that you've got common brands that are on sale in many different parts of the world. You've got global financial institutions, the IMF, the World Bank, and so forth. You've got global financial markets.
So if we look at all those things which you're lumping together and calling globalization, can we start to analyze perhaps the reasons, the causes for those things happening?
Well, it's partly technology. The fact that transport is so much quicker than it used to be. The fact that we have the internet, that kind of thing. There's also the growth of global financial institutions, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the growth of financial markets, the growth of global companies. So, increasingly, it makes sense to talk in terms of, well, it's ridiculous to say that everything is globalized, but that the boundaries, the economic barriers between the countries have broken down. And so, many companies and much of the economy works on has a global perspective.
So, what are some of the benefits of this new world we're living in?
Well, the theoretical benefits are that if you have globalization with all those things that we've been talking about, you have greater efficiency and thus greater wealth. And that in some cases, some poor countries have lifted themselves out of poverty because of their access to global markets. And those people would say that people are a lot better off and a lot better educated in China than they were 15 years ago because of that country's phenomenal economic growth. And that's been tied into the fact that China's involved in international trade, and countries like South Korea and Japan grew in the same way before it. So there have been some definite winners, and it's, if you like, globalization provides a forum in which opportunities for many people and many countries have greatly increased.
But if there are winners, are there losers as well?
Of course. A lot of people would say that these impacts have not only been positive, some have been negative, and that the process of globalization is a process in which some countries win and others lose. So that, for example, if you've got very cheap labor like China, you expand enormously in areas that involve cheap labor, to the disadvantage of other countries which have not got cheap labor. And yet, if you've got very good technology, like Japan, say, you do very well, which means that there are also losers, other people who don't have quite such good technology as Japan who've lost out. And a lot of people say, well, that's actually negative. And, of course, globalization is often associated with the growth of global corporations, in which there are fewer restrictions on what they can do. Some people say this is good, and others say that there are many problems with it.
Finally then, Linda, as a journalist, when you're reporting news stories about globalization, are there any particular language issues to bear in mind?
Yes, the war against multisyllable words, I think. For example, you've got words such as multilateralism. That's a process in which lots of countries are involved, as opposed to bilateralism, the process in which just two countries are involved. Lots of syllables and lots of jargon floating around. So to try and avoid some of that is, if you like, a kind of constant war. On the other hand, people have to know to understand the jargon. But where possible, you have to avoid it. Also, jargon changes over time. For instance, we used to have multinational companies. Now the buzzword is transnational companies.
This is Gary Brand, and I was talking to BBC's World Service business correspondent, Linda Gregory.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
Globalization is a buzzword in our news bulletins. Though according to some commentators, it's by no means a new phenomenon. Linda Gregory is the BBC World Service business correspondent. I've been speaking to her about globalization, and I asked her first for her definition of the term.
Well, globalization has become a kind of catch-all phrase that's used to describe the process of seemingly ever greater economic integration. A process in which economic events in one place pretty soon have huge implications almost everywhere else. So, there's a lot of different aspects to it. From the consumer's point of view, increasingly people think in terms of global brands. Nike sells its sneakers throughout the world, and Coca-Cola is bought in almost every country in the world. That's one aspect of it. Then, of course, there's the sort of, the economists are focused on things like the enormously increased volumes of international trade. And many commentators associate that with this nebulous process of globalization. And then, of course, there's the increasing pace of technological change. The fact that using modern communications via the internet, you have instant communication everywhere. And of course, using jet travel, you can travel rapidly from one place to another all over the world. So, increasingly, what happens in one place seems to affect almost everywhere else. And that's what's clubbed together as globalization.
Technological developments have made communication and travel much easier, so that the world seems to be a smaller place. This has resulted, for example, in greater international trade and foreign investment, both of which are signs or manifestations of what the experts call globalization. There are also cultural aspects of the globalization process, such as the increasing use of English and the appearance of similar, often American, products in different parts of the world. Here's Linda again.
The manifestations include global companies, the names that everybody's heard of, Sony, Microsoft, IBM, and also the fact that you've got common brands that are on sale in many different parts of the world. You've got global financial institutions, the IMF, the World Bank, and so forth. You've got global financial markets.
So if we look at all those things which you're lumping together and calling globalization, can we start to analyze perhaps the reasons, the causes, for those things happening?
Well, it's partly technology. The fact that transport is so much quicker than it used to be. The fact that we have the internet, that kind of thing. There's also the growth of global financial institutions. The World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the growth of financial markets, the growth of global companies. So, increasingly, it makes sense to talk in terms of, well, it's ridiculous to say that everything is globalized, but that the boundaries, the economic barriers between the countries have broken down. And so, many companies and much of the economy works on has a global perspective.
So, what are some of the benefits of this new world we're living in?
Well, the theoretical benefits are that if you have globalization with all those things that we've been talking about, you have greater efficiency and thus greater wealth. And that in some cases, some poor countries have lifted themselves out of poverty because of their access to global markets. And those people would say that people are a lot better off and a lot better educated in China than they were 15 years ago because of that country's phenomenal economic growth. And that's been tied into the fact that China's involved in international trade, and countries like South Korea and Japan grew in the same way before it. So there have been some definite winners, and it's, if you like, globalization provides a forum in which opportunities for many people and many countries have greatly increased.
But if there are winners, are there losers as well?
Of course. A lot of people would say that these impacts have not only been positive, some have been negative, and that the process of globalization is a process in which some countries win and others lose. So that, for example, if you've got very cheap labor like China, you expand enormously in areas that involve cheap labor, to the disadvantage of other countries which have not got cheap labor. And yet, if you've got very good technology, like Japan, say, you do very well, which means that there are also losers, other people who don't have quite such good technology as Japan who've lost out. And a lot of people say, well, that's actually negative. And of course, globalization is often associated with the growth of global corporations, in which there are fewer restrictions on what they can do. Some people say this is good, and others say that there are many problems with it.
Finally then, Linda, as a journalist, when you're reporting news stories about globalization, are there any particular language issues to bear in mind?
Yes, the war against multisyllable words, I think. For example, you've got words such as multilateralism. That's a process in which lots of countries are involved, as opposed to bilateralism, the process in which just two countries are involved. Lots of syllables and lots of jargon floating around. So to try and avoid some of that is, if you like, a kind of constant war. On the other hand, people have to know to understand the jargon, but where possible, you have to avoid it. Also, jargon changes over time. For instance, we used to have multinational companies. Now the buzzword is transnational companies.
This is Gary Brand, and I was talking to BBC's World Service business correspondent, Linda Gregory.
That is the end of task one. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers. Now turn to task two. Task two. In the second part of the test, you're going to hear an interview with a journalist talking about her life and work. For questions 1 to 10, mark the best answer A, B, or C. You now have 90 seconds in which to look at task two. Ready?
In Private Lives today, we meet Debbie Davis. She lives with her three children in Huntingdonshire, in the east of England. Debbie is the chief reporter for a local newspaper. Most places in Britain have free local newspapers where you can read about what people are doing in the area. We'll be hearing about people in Huntingdonshire, as Debbie shows us a copy of the Hunts Post newspaper, and we'll hear about Debbie's life, her interests, and how she combines a successful career with being a mother.
Well, I came into journalism quite late. I was 29 when I started college. I had three young children. They were all at school then. It was a very difficult time for me. I'd sort of finally found something that I really wanted to do in life, but there was a price to pay, I guess. It was very tiring. My marriage had fallen apart at that time, so I had just moved. The house was a lot smaller than what we'd been used to. We only had two bedrooms. There were three children sharing one room. So it was a real struggle, and I think I would have given up had journalism not been something I really wanted to do.
However, Debbie didn't give up. Journalism was something she very much wanted to do and something she's good at. She moved very quickly from being a junior reporter to becoming the chief reporter at the Hunts Post newspaper. Life isn't such a struggle for Debbie now, but the day begins early and she does a lot of things before she leaves the house.
It's 8:05 in the morning. I've just finished listening to the breakfast news. I've listened to the local news to find out if there's anything which the paper needs to be covering, maybe later today. I'm just finishing a piece of toast. That's all I generally have in the morning. I cook for the boys, but I tend to make do with a piece of toast and a cup of tea. I've already polished the coffee table in the living room and used the dustbuster and put some washing in the washing machine. And here I am now writing a shopping list.
Debbie is thinking about the day's work ahead and preparing her children for school. Then she leaves for work. It's a 12-mile drive. It's Wednesday and the Hunts Post newspaper is published on a Wednesday. This means that Tuesday is Debbie's busiest day, as a new edition of the paper has to be ready for printing. So the first thing she does when she arrives at work is to tidy up, to organise her desk again.
I'm at work now and my desk is very messy because I had a very busy Tuesday. So normally the first thing I do on a Wednesday is to tidy up my desk. I'm just going to turn my computer on and start opening my mail.
Next, Debbie shows us a copy of the Hunts Post. The front page story is one she's very proud of. With the story, there's a large photo of a local girl, Christina Hans. She looks very similar to Diana, Princess of Wales. She works as a Princess Diana lookalike, so she might be hired for things like parties or to appear in advertisements. Debbie talks about this front page story.
It was a good story because she's a 36-year-old single mum, and she said that her role as this Princess Di lookalike had made her depressed and suicidal, and it really meant that her life had more or less run along the same tracks as the princess herself. So this probably isn't a typical week's newspaper because of the front page story. These sorts of stories happen maybe two or three times a year. You get a story that is of national, and with this story, international interest.
A story like Christina's, which is of worldwide interest, doesn't often happen in Huntingdonshire. Generally, the stories are only of local interest. Debbie knows from all the letters she gets that she's covering the right stories. She explains that people want to read about local subjects and problems, and they want to see themselves in the paper.
The picture we have on page 3 is a local man who sat in a bath of beans. That was to raise money for Comic Relief. That's the kind of thing that local people get up to. That's the kind of thing that the local community is all about, and the kind of thing we cover week in, week out. On page 4, we always have our weddings. This section is very popular. Everybody wants their wedding in the Hunts Post. And we have 2 pages of letters. We get lots of letters, which is a really good sign that we are a good paper, because how else do we know, really? We're a free paper, we don't sell it, so we know by our letters page that people are actually reading it, and also that they actually care about the issues that we're writing about.
Something in the paper, which Debbie has started, is a page for children called Wicked, It covers topics of interest for children and is interactive. The children are involved. Next week's issues of Wicked is going to be about pocket money.
I've just received this press release, and it's about children's pocket money. It's actually saying that children in this area are worse off than in other parts of the country. They get less pocket money, apparently. So what we're going to do today is to go out onto the high street in Huntingdonshire and find some children and ask them how much pocket money they get and what they spend it on. The article will go on the children's page, which we call Wicked, with lots of information for children, ideas for where they can go, clubs they can join, and so on. It's also quite interactive. It has a column we call Word on the Street, and we get a child each week to write in and tell us about what they think is going on. And they talk about music and films and clubs and DVDs they've watched.
When Debbie isn't working, she enjoys being with her children. This time is particularly important to her, as she knows it won't last forever, because her children will soon want to do other things. To relax, Debbie likes to read, to garden, and to decorate her home. Well, that's all for now. Do join us again in our next edition of Private Lives. Same time, same station.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
In Private Lives today, we meet Debbie Davis. She lives with her three children in Huntingdonshire, in the east of England. Debbie is the chief reporter for a local newspaper. Most places in Britain have free local newspapers where you can read about what people are doing in the area. We'll be hearing about people in Huntingdonshire, as Debbie shows us a copy of the Hunts Post newspaper, and we'll hear about Debbie's life, her interests, and how she combines a successful career with being a mother.
Well, I came into journalism quite late. I was 29 when I started college. I had three young children. They were all at school then. It was a very difficult time for me. I'd sort of finally found something that I really wanted to do in life. But there was a price to pay, I guess. It was very tiring. My marriage had fallen apart at that time, so I had just moved. The house was a lot smaller than what we'd been used to. We only had two bedrooms. There were three children sharing one room. So it was a real struggle, and I think I would have given up had journalism not been something I really wanted to do.
However, Debbie didn't give up. Journalism was something she very much wanted to do and something she's good at. She moved very quickly from being a junior reporter to becoming the chief reporter at the Hunts Post newspaper. Life isn't such a struggle for Debbie now, but the day begins early and she does a lot of things before she leaves the house.
It's 8:05 in the morning. I've just finished listening to the breakfast news. I've listened to the local news to find out if there's anything which the paper needs to be covering, maybe later today. I'm just finishing a piece of toast. That's all I generally have in the morning. I cook for the boys, but I tend to make do with a piece of toast and a cup of tea. I've already polished the coffee table in the living room and used the dustbuster and put some washing in the washing machine. And here I am now writing a shopping list.
Debbie is thinking about the day's work ahead and preparing her children for school. Then she leaves for work. It's a 12-mile drive. It's Wednesday and the Hunts Post newspaper is published on a Wednesday. This means that Tuesday is Debbie's busiest day, as a new edition of the paper has to be ready for printing. So the first thing she does when she arrives at work is to tidy up, to organise her desk again.
I'm at work now and my desk is very messy because I had a very busy Tuesday. So normally the first thing I do on a Wednesday is to tidy up my desk. I'm just going to turn my computer on and start opening my mail.
Next, Debbie shows us a copy of the Hunts Post. The front page story is one she's very proud of. With the story, there's a large photo of a local girl, Christina Hans. She looks very similar to Diana, Princess of Wales. She works as a Princess Diana lookalike, so she might be hired for things like parties or to appear in advertisements. Debbie talks about this front page story.
It was a good story because she's a 36-year-old single mum, and she said that her role as this Princess Di lookalike had made her depressed and suicidal, and it really meant that her life had more or less run along the same tracks as the princess herself. So this probably isn't a typical week's newspaper, because of the front page story. These sorts of stories happen maybe two or three times a year. You get a story that is of national, and with this story, international interest.
A story like Christina's, which is of worldwide interest, doesn't often happen in Huntingdonshire. Generally, the stories are only of local interest. Debbie knows from all the letters she gets that she's covering the right stories. She explains that people want to read about local subjects and problems, and they want to see themselves in the paper.
The picture we have on page 3 is a local man who sat in a bath of beans. That was to raise money for Comic Relief. That's the kind of thing that local people get up to. That's the kind of thing that the local community is all about, and the kind of thing we cover week in, week out. On page 4, we always have our weddings. This section is very popular. Everybody wants their wedding in the Hunt's Post. And we have 2 pages of letters. We get lots of letters, which is a really good sign that we are a good paper, because how else do we know, really? We're a free paper, we don't sell it, so we know by our letters page that people are actually reading it, and also that they actually care about the issues that we're writing about.
Something in the paper, which Debbie has started, is a page for children called Wicked. It covers topics of interest for children and is interactive. The children are involved. Next week's issues of Wicked is going to be about pocket money.
I've just received this press release, and it's about children's pocket money. It's actually saying that children in this area are worse off than in other parts of the country. They get less pocket money, apparently. So what we're going to do today is to go out onto the High Street in Huntingdonshire and find some children and ask them how much pocket money they get and what they spend it on. The article will go on the children's page, which we call Wicked, with lots of information for children, ideas for where they can go, clubs they can join, and so on. It's also quite interactive. It has a column we call Word on the Street, and we get a child each week to write in and tell us about what they think is going on. And they talk about music and films and clubs and DVDs they've watched.
When Debbie isn't working, she enjoys being with her children. This time is particularly important to her, as she knows it won't last forever, because her children will soon want to do other things. To relax, Debbie likes to read, to garden, and to decorate her home. Well, that's all for now. Do join us again in our next edition of Private Lives. Same time, same station.
That is the end of task 2. You now have 2 minutes to check your answers. That is the end of the listening comprehension test. Stop writing and hand in your papers.